Welcome to Simple Living Works, episodes 76 and 77. I'm Jerry Iverson. It's my pleasure to be your host for this two-parter with my guests from Celebrating Ugly Food and Fighting for Clean Water. If you're new to this podcast and would like more basic information about Simple Living Works, please listen clear to the end. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye at my cue. This was a fun educational project for the public, playing on our unfortunate need for produce that's perfect in appearance. We provided handouts for participants summarizing the need for food safety and security, tips, resources, etc. Every Sunday in August, we had speakers, film, music, worship, and fun while exploring the intersection of faith, food, and water in a time of drought. San Luis Obispo County, also called the Central Coast, midway between San Francisco and Los Angeles, is the second largest county in the state, space-wise, and is the epicenter of California's prolonged drought. In addition to eating, the event promoted food and water conservation, promoted gleaning efforts in the county and efforts to feed the hungry locally, nationally, and globally, and reduce food waste by debunking convenience in our homes and restaurants. Some of the ugly food facts we learned: 40% of food in America goes to waste in fields and gardens, in stores, restaurants, and schools. Ugly produce can actually be healthier than pretty food. Some imperfect cracked fruit, for example, contains more antioxidants. France now requires supermarkets to give away unsold food. We also provided tips, such as carrying a reusable take-home container in our cars saves leftovers from our restaurants' meals and keeps our single-use containers out of the landfill. In part one, Amy Beveridge, pastor of Bethel Lutheran Church in Templeton, California, introduces how the concept of ugly food evolved there. Then Gail McNichols Oliver, a founder of Glean Slow, and Emily Wilson, Glean Slow's volunteer coordinator, explain how gleaning rescues and distributes produce in San Luis Obispo County. And we link, if you would, to an additional extended interview with Gail in the show notes. Also linked to biblical reflections by Pastor Amy on gleaning related to Jesus' feeding of the multitudes. Also in the show notes is a link to the promotional materials for Bethel's Ugly Food Project, which another congregation or group could use. It includes a variety of bulletin inserts, media releases, and a basic project workflow timeline. And even more links to the public broadcasting documentary Tossed Out, Food Waste in America, and to video shorts from Lutheran World Relief. In part two, Paula Wansa tells the a moving story of how a small group of dedicated women cleaned up California's most toxic waste dump in their community. It's an example of how people fight for clean water. In the show notes is a link to the powerful documentary, Thirsty for Justice, The Struggle for the Human Right to Clean Water.
I'm Paula Wansa. I spent most of my life in Riverside, California, and I now live in Paso Robles, but I would like to tell you the story of the Stringfellow Toxic Waste Dump. This was a site which was located just a mile from my house in Glen Avon, California. This is about our drinking water and how we take it for granted. Water, the liquid that descends from the clouds as rain, forms streams, lakes, and seas, and is a major constituent of all living matter. Water, which we need to protect from pollutants and conserve from our very wastefulness. The Bible makes numerous references to water. Just to name a few, Psalm 23, He leads me beside still water. Psalm 24, the earth is the Lord's, for he founded it upon the seas and established it upon the waters. Proverbs 25, like cold water, a weary soul is good news from a distant land. Clearly, we are not the owners of the land and the sea, but merely its caretakers. This is the story of how one community's water supply was impacted by mismanagement, no regulations, and a quick fix to a messy problem. A story about men and women and their commitment to justice and fairness in the face of corporate greed. This is a story of Stringfellow acid pits in Glen Avon, California, which at the time was named the worst toxic waste site since the Love Canal. And so the saga of Stringfellow acid pits begins. In 1955, technology was ticking along. The U.S. was vying with the Soviet Union for a place in space. Boeing, Roar Aircraft, Rockwell, Montrose Chemical, McDonnell Douglas were thriving. It was during this time the state of California began looking for some land to use as a hazardous waste site. Up to this point, many of the trucks who were needing to unload their toxic cargo used the county dumps or just would drive down a deserted road and drop their waste. The state became aware of a need to find a site to dispose of all this toxic waste, and so they heard of a quarry site tucked into the hills above the 60 freeway in Glen Avon, California, which is a small suburb of Riverside. The site was owned by the Stringfellows, who used the quarry to chip out large rocks of granite to form ocean jetties. So a young geologist was hired to see if this could be a suitable place for a toxic waste dump. He looked the quarry over and said he believed the bedrock in these hills would hold the liquid waste in place, but public records show no subsurface tests were ever done. And so a land variance permit was issued from the county, and a year later, the first truckloads of industrial waste rumbled through the quiet foothills of Glen Avon, dumping their toxic loads, creating large ponds of industrial waste. From 1956 until 1972, about 200 companies dumped 34 million gallons of chemicals, including DDT, solvents, hydrochloric acid, assorted heavy metals such as lead, nickel, cadmium, and chromium, PCBs, sulfates, sulfuric acid, and nitric acid. All of this was mixed together in open pits. Sprinklers were later installed to accelerate the evaporation by propelling this toxic soup into the air. By 1972, residents of Glen Avon began to complain about health effects caused by the waste from the pits. They claimed that some of the chemicals were evaporating and polluting the town's air, while other chemicals were leaching out and contaminating the town's drinking water supply. For most of the small farms and homes in the area relied on their own private wells for water. About this time, people started complaining and were asking Stringfellow to shut down the site. And Stringfellow got tired of it all, and the pits, he quit paying taxes on the pits, and the state took over responsibility for maintaining the site. Ron and I had joined a group of citizens who were calling for the site to be contained and cleaned up properly. We had our well tested and found out we had the highest nitrate reading in the county had ever seen, and also a high amount of radiation. For we lived only 1 mile west of the site, and I taught at Glen Avon Elementary School, which is only 1 mile downstream from the site. For several years, the pond sat in limbo while various agencies battled as to who would take responsibility for cleaning up the mess. There were thoughts of just covering up with bulldozers and letting it go. Others said, no, we needed to pump it all out and move it to a different spot. But the people in Glen Avon said no, they wanted the site to remain there and for us to clean up our own mess and not send it to someone else. But in March of 1978, we had a major rainstorm and the site began overflowing. The earthen dam holding back the ponds was on the verge of collapsing. The Riverside Water Quality Control Board decided to do a controlled release of about 1 million gallons of liquid, which was laden with acid, salts, heavy metals, and over 30 known carcinogens into our community. No warning was given to the community. In fact, we didn't find out it had been done until people began wondering why the water in their fields was all foamy. Contaminated waste washed over the playground of our school and then onto the farms and the lawns of our community. This was of a great health concern to the parents of local children and to those who lived in the contaminated area. They wondered if they could eat the food from their gardens or if the farmers could sell their crops. In 1979, another group of citizens called Concerned Neighbors in Action was formed. We had our own Erin Brockovich named Penny Newman. She was PTA president at our school and also taught in the district. Since I was a teacher at Glen Avon School and a parent of two of its students, and I also lived in the community, I also joined up with this group. Little did I know that for the next 20 years, we would be involved in every aspect of finding a permanent solution to the cleanup of the site. Our group of about 10 committed members organized and began our crusade to ensure that the pits would be safely and permanently shut down. Our members went to Sacramento to testify at meetings and to lobby congressmen and state representatives. We went to Washington, D.C. to testify at EPA meetings. By this time, we were aware that a plume of contaminated water was moving underground. The school well was finally closed down in 1983. A survey of the residents found a higher incidence of miscarriages, birth defects, and cancers in our area. Our group was trying to get support from Sacramento to hook anyone up to wells, anyone on wells to the community water system. By 1984, we were able to get the Department of Health Services to supply bottled water to all residents who relied on private wells. Later that year, CNA pushed for the alternative water system for all the people on wells. Our own Penny Newman was able to get invited to a fundraiser for the then Governor Dick Majan. She managed to get introduced to him at the meeting and grabbed his hand and wouldn't let go and told him, "We need to talk." Cameras were rolling and the governor couldn't get away until Penny explained about the plight of the people in Glen Avon. Later, someone on the governor's staff told her that Duke Majan said to them, "I don't care what you do, just get that woman off my back." In 1985, Senate Bill 1063 was passed then, providing funds for connecting the residences who were on wells to our community water system. By November 1984, we had also sought a personal injury and damage lawsuit, which was filed on behalf of 4,000 plaintiffs against all responsible parties involved in contamination of the air and water in Glen Avon. I was one of the five members of the lawsuit steering committee, and we also had two members who were guardian ad litem, who made decisions for the children. The five of us on the steering committee made decisions for and on behalf of the 4,000 plaintiffs. This lawsuit was finally settled in 1995, with $114 million being recovered for the citizens of Glen Avon. It took 11 years to reach a settlement. On the average, it worked out to about $11,000 per person, but since this was not a class action lawsuit, where each person would get the same amount of money, for each plaintiff had filed their own claim for damages. The steering committee had to formulate a plan for distributing the monies. The plan was based on a point system, with children getting more points, as they are more susceptible to long-term toxic damage. Points were given for those living closer to the pits, points for attending Glen Avon School, points for the years lived in the affected area, points for illnesses, etc. During those years, we attended and hosted environmental seminars and town hall meetings. We demonstrated in front of polluting factories and businesses, often hazardous waste sites or businesses and companies with environmentally damaging material will choose poor neighborhoods to locate their businesses. A case in point are the poor Mexican laborers who work out in the fields with the toxic pesticides, or the poor families in Flint, Michigan, with the lead poisoning in their drinking water. These are the people who have no voice, who can't afford an expensive lawyer. They are promised one thing, but often get very short-changed. In 1980, when the Superfund was passed, the Stringfellow Pits were named the most polluted waste site in California. The pits became one of the first targets for remediation by the EPA, but this effort collapsed in the wake of a scandal that rocked the EPA and the Reagan administration. EPA Administrators Rita Lavelle and Ann Burford were found guilty of mishandling the Superfund program and were forced to resign, along with 22 other officials. Finally, by 1985, remediation and cleanup began again for the Stringfellow Pits. Concerned Neighbors in Action pushed to have community members on the advisory committee so that we would have a voice in all aspects of the cleanup decisions. The pits are now being monitored and cleaned with Stringfellow monies. We have extraction wells on site which pump and clean the contaminated water to a treatment plant before we release it again into the sewer disposal system. The time estimate for the final cleanup is from 300 to 400 years. The cost up to as of 2001 was over $700 million. For Glenavon residents, the statement, "Those that forget the past are destined to repeat it," shows us that only by remembering the mistakes made in the past can we ensure that they are not again repeated. In telling the story, a community changed attitudes, gained respect, and formulated local, state, and national policy. Sometimes we wonder if we can really make a difference. This is a story of courageous actions by regular folks who did make a difference. For in their community, they stopped all the exposure to the chemicals. They made sure we had a new water system for those people on wells. They won a $114 million lawsuit in damages for the people of Glenavon. They built a community park with the $225,000 given to the community by the law firm that represented them. The group helped create a state fund for toxic sites not covered by federal Superfund. We helped to create hazardous material response teams. We mandated that all cities and counties inventory toxic sites, and they banned land disposal of liquid waste from now on. There, we had companies held responsible for toxics from the beginning to the end, or from cradle to grave. In 1986, Superfund law changed to grant rights of communities to participate in decisions at the site. We made a difference in our communities, but vigilance is always needed. There is still a lot of work to be done. We must still learn to be good stewards of our water supply.
Thank you, Paula. Now, I understand that this group was made up primarily of women.
Yes, it was. We sometimes got our husbands to help a little bit, but mostly it was the women who did the work.
So, Paula, do you have any other interesting footnotes you'd like to add?
Well, as a teacher at Glenavon School, I would kind of like to let you know about how we handled the thought that the dam might break and flood our school. So during the release of toxic chemicals into the community of Glenavon, the Rupa School District decided that they needed to come up with a plan to protect the children and the staff at Glenavon Elementary School. The earthen dam that held back the toxic chemicals was in immediate danger of completely falling apart. If this should happen, the entire school site was in danger of being flooded. The school staff was summoned to an early morning meeting to discuss options and procedures to follow in case such a disaster should take place. One option was to close the school until the crisis was over. This would mean, of course, loss of class instruction and also loss of average daily attendance funds. The school district decided on a second option, which was an evacuation plan. The teachers were told to continue class instruction as usual and to keep on a rainy day schedule. All recesses were to be held indoors. We were told that the district was in contact with the county, and if there was an imminent danger of the earthen dam giving way, the school office would be quickly notified. The office would then ring one long bell. This would be our signal to quickly take our children to waiting buses, where they would be transported to another school site away from the danger area. But if we heard two bells, it would be too late to move the children, as the dam would already have been breached. We were then to have our students climb on top of their desks and hope for the best. Teachers were instructed not to tell the parents of the plan, as it was felt it might lead to panic. So even so, some of the staff felt compelled to share the information with concerned parents. But as luck would have it, there was no need to use either plan. But our peaceful school life would never be the same.
You've been listening to my conversations with friends from Celebrating Ugly Food and Fighting for Clean Water, a month-long project from Bethel Lutheran Church, Templeton, California, which included several themes: clean water in a time of drought, gleaning of leftover produce, culminating in an ugly food banquet. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to simplelivingworks@yahoo.com, on our Facebook page, or on the Simple Living Works blog. Those addresses are given in the show notes at our website, simplelivingworks.org. Click window number 3. Time to wrap up this episode of Simple Living Works podcast. Because these episodes are a bit shorter than usual, I'm delighted to include a full rendition of our closing theme song. If you're new to Simple Living Works podcast and would like more basic information about Simple Living Works, please listen a little longer. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye here. Peace. If you haven't subscribed yet, we hope you will now through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Remember that you can listen to all episodes of Simple Living Works podcast. They're archived twice. Access them at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Click Preview, Backup, and choose the episodes you want with or without show notes. Subscriptions to this podcast and our weekly blog are free, and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. Urge your friends to do the same. Remember to like us on Facebook. You can also subscribe in iTunes to my other podcast, The Common Good Podcast, which I produce and co-host with Jubilee One Earth Economics. Send us your email address to receive the free email, the free monthly Simple Living Works e-news. Thanks to the band Earth Mama and to John Pitney for the music on our show. This podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution Share Alike license. To learn more about Creative Commons, click on its link on our website homepage. We do not solicit or accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. We at Simple Living Works believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity, choosing to live simpler lives, is a faithful, satisfying, effective, comprehensive way of life. It's not a list of rules nor living on the cheap. It avoids fads, convenience, and deprivation. It's so much more than a hobby. We believe in abundance, that there's enough for everybody's needs, not anybody's greed. We follow the saying, live simply that others may simply live, as our closing theme song proclaims. It's a balance of personal responsibility and advocacy for just public policy. It's more than personal happiness, though that's quite important. Contemporary faith-based simple living is guided by the 5 life standards of Living More with Less, the classic by Doris Jansen Longacre. I've discussed these standards in earlier episodes. The mission of Simple Living Works is equipping people of faith to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. We extend the mission and resources of the nonprofit organization Alternatives, which served from 1973 to 2011. The 3 parts of our mission are elaborated in text and video, and links are listed in the show notes. We produce a half-hour podcast twice a month, hopefully educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works Podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly.
Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. Come everyone who has thirst, those who have nothing come by. Why spend your labor for things that simply do not satisfy? Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. The bread in your cupboard belongs to one who is hungry out there, and the coats in your closet unused could warm up the ones who stand bare. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. See how the wealth you acquire is borne on the backs of the poor, whose whose children beg daily for food, whose land feeds your child who wants more. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. Your children who need their own rooms lament that the forest will die, and those who would join field to field must stop long enough to ask why. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. God chose the weak of the world to shame the way of the strong. Learn how to live from the poor. Their wisdom will help us belong. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. Do not conform to the world. Be certain that better's not more. Contentment will transform your need, awakening what God has in store. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live.